all day. High of 82, low of 61. And it looks like that is the front. And then Friday, at the other end of the front, we go down to 72 for a high, and up to 61, up to 72 as a high, and down to 61 as a low. On Saturday, we're looking at 81 high, Sunday 84, Monday 86. We're just about out of it. So let me continue with these commercials, and I'll be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on 100 in Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@100-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inchamberradio.com, brought to you by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
¿Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
So, hey, it's Joe Peters, and today it is a little bit after 4 o'clock, 4:07 to be exact. It is the 10th of September, and I'm going to play my introduction, and then we're going to get going.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So now you know a little about me. My name is Joe Peters. I'm with Coldwell Banker. I cover both Hunterdon and Somerset County, and I really straddled the both. I live here in Clinton, and I'm a member of both chambers. I'm an ambassador in both chambers, which means I help new members get seated and understand what the chamber can do for them. So today we're going to talk about millennials. And I've uncovered a guide, and I'm going to show it to you. It's a guide on A Millennial's Guide to Home Ownership. And I started to read it, and I said, this would be great fodder for the radio show. Most people use millennials as a description of something they don't like. And quite honestly, I think it's something they don't understand. It's the next generation or two generations down from them, depending on where they're at. And millennials are our future. Millennials are going to be 50% of the workforce by a year or two from now. Millennials have purchased about 25, if not 35% of all houses in the last year or two, and they purchase more if we had more to sell in the price ranges that they're buying. But they think differently, just the way we thought differently. I remember my parents saying, oh, that rock and roll, it's going to have devil's music. You know, good grief. Every generation had a generation before them looking down and saying, you guys are never going to make it. Well, you know what? Somehow we always made it. And I got pretty good indication in my mind after working with a bunch of them that the millennials are going to make it as well. It's just that they grew up differently. They grew up in different times, and they have different wants and needs and different thought processes on how they should live their lives. So we're going to go through a little bit of that today. I'm going to cover this guide. This guide, by the way, is available if you go to jpeters.com. That's my site, /guides. There is a form you can fill out. Tell me which guide you want. This is the Millennials. I have a buyer's guide and a seller's guide. I'll be more than happy to email it to you. So once again, Joe Peters, and let's get started. So what do you think of first when you think of a millennial? You think of somebody got a trophy for showing up. I've heard all these descriptions before. Somebody that thinks they can be looking at the TV, talking to their phone and talking to you at the same time, or at least texting on their phone. They're very multi-tasking in their outlook on life. And they also are pretty self-confident that they know a lot. And to some extent they do. To some extent, I think we all have something to learn. So I try to blend it down to a point of these guys aren't going anywhere. They're coming at us. And when I give a talk to people that are thinking about selling in their house in the next couple of years, I said, you better pay attention because these are probably who's going to buy your house from you, depending on your price point. I mean, we in Hunterdon County and Somerset have about four or five generations all working together and all living together, and now the younger generations are buying houses. As I said, about a third of all our business right now is millennial. But let's look at my generation. It's probably the most senior generation. Our parents were the people who fought in World War II. We were probably war babies, or baby boomers, as they call them. And then we got a Generation X, Y, and Z. And Generation Z is, I think, what we're calling the millennials. But I'm going to just call them by what they like to be called or don't like to be called. And I'm going to tell you what it is they're thinking so that you, as a home buyer or a seller or a millennial, can better understand the situation. So who should read this guide? It says, U.S. millennial generation is the largest generation in the United States, according to the Census Bureau. Millennials born between 1980 and 2000, 82 and 2000, number 83 million and represent more than a quarter of the nation's population. Their size exceeds the 75 million in the baby boomers. You are one of millions of millennials. If you're one of millions of millennials who have seen the peers begin to buy homes recently and are wondering what it takes to do the same, you found the right guide, and that's what this guide is for. I'd be more than happy to send it to you, but I'm going to hit the highlights of it. There are many stereotypes and myths about millennial generation as a whole and about what it takes to buy a home in today's market. These myths have prevented many millennials from even considering home ownership and the option for them and their families, as an option for them and their families. The goal of this guide is to provide the information that you will need to make the best decision for you and your family regards to home ownership, and it'll break down the myths and the stereotypes that have long believed you to be true, and will shed some light on the opportunity you have to build wealth using your home, your monthly housing costs to do that. And I'm sure this is going to go into it because I do a lot of rent versus buy. If you're coming back from college or just leaving the house and maybe you're in the trades or junior college and you want to get out on your first foray into society on your own, in effect, what you're encountering is it's more expensive than you think. And, for example, an average one-bedroom apartment in Hunterdon County, this consists of nothing more than a bedroom, a bathroom, and a kitchen, a dining area, and a living room. Probably has a balcony, probably has a parking space with it. It's going to run you about $1,300 to $1,400. Now, in order to affordably cover that, you probably need to make somewhere around $50,000. If, in effect, you are going to spend $1,300 or $1,400, you could probably buy that same condo as an initial property and then turn it into a rental later, or just turn it over and take some gain that you'd probably get out of it. And it would be cheaper than renting it. But most millennials, oh, yeah, I don't have the 20% down. I got to have a 750 credit score. I really haven't even built my credit up. These are the myths we're going to talk about. It seems like all of your friends are buying a house. It's because they are. But don't worry. You're not alone if you haven't. There's been a lot of talk about how, as a generation of millennials, have failed to launch into adulthood and have delayed moving out of their families' homes. Well, that's been changing as of recent. What doesn't seem to mention is, in the same context, however, is a large number of millennials who have moved out of their families' homes but have been renting an apartment or a condo or even a house. Many experts have looked at the home ownership rate amongst millennials and questioned if they ever want to own a home, even want to own a home. Do the millennials even want to own a home? The great news is that not only do millennials want to own, they are flocking to real estate market in larger numbers every year. Buyers 18 to 34 have comprised the largest share of first-time buyer home buyers in roughly a 50 to 60% of those in the last few years. 2017, buyers aged 25 to 34, and that's the prime age for a millennial to buy a house, accounted for 65% of all the first-time home buyers as compared to 50% in 2005. So it's gone up quite a bit. According to the National Association of Realtors profile for home buyers and sellers, the average age of a first-time buyer 2017 was 32. This generation will continue to be a topic of conversation a lot when it comes to housing, and much more than an average home when it comes to housing, as much and more enter more and more enter the average housing buyer age. Expert needs to start looking at all millennials together and lumping them as one classification. In a group of people such as 18 to 36, according to census, it's impossible to draw a conclusion about this generation as a whole, despite what many have tried to do. Many experts have begun to realize that there's a noticeable difference between the behaviors and experience of the generations, and they have therefore divided them into young millennials, 18 to 26, and older millennials, 27 to 36. And I argue the older millennial is your house buyer. No matter which group you find yourself in, you no doubt have peers that fit into the other category and may even identify with different characteristics from each group. One of the many reasons that it's been easy for the experts to lump all millennials into the 66% of millennials are under the age of 30, 22% are under the age of 25, according to a study by NerdWallet, leading authority on this. when the majority of generation is still in their 20s, of this generation still in their 20s, either not ready or not in a position to make a life change decision, such as buying as a home and starting a family. It has been easy for those who follow these trends not to notice the progress of the older millennials that are they're making. So we call this the responsibility zone. It's calling. It's I've just watched, and it was her second house, but I watched Marilyn is my significant other. Her son just bought a house. He's in his early 40s, but it's a second. He had a house for the last 12 years. And this sense of arrival is wonderful. I mean, it's really where it's at. We're pushed into the zone or willing as a willing participant. Many older millennials are aging into the responsibility zone, the age range when it's responsible to start to dictate behaviors such as moving out of the house, important first step. Getting married, that's up to you when the time is right. But it's a lot later than it used to be. We used to be getting married in 25 to 30. Now we're getting married somewhere 5 to 7 years later than that. Buying a home, usually not exactly when you first get married. I think most people getting married rent for a year or two and then find, and then having children. And that's much different than when it was. I mean, my wife and I had 5 children by the time we were 25. You'd never hear that happening. And having 5 children, people look at you like, my God. It's different. It's easier not to have children. It's more expensive to have children. And there's a lot of reasons that millennials want children later in life. And it's happening that way. Average age to buy a house is probably 30 to 35. Average age for the first child is late in that cycle. You are not necessarily... You may have noticed that many of your friends and families have started to make pretty big decisions all at once. There are many millennials who are crossing all 4 of these major events off their list in a 2-year span. Once again, moving out of the house, getting married, buying a house, and having children. If you blink, you might miss it. Over the last 60 years, the median age of first marriage for Americans has increased substantially. And we're going to take a look at it. The percentage of married people at 18 to 23, and once again, you got millennials, and then you got Gen X, you got the baby boomers, and then you got the silent generation. And I'm on the edge of baby boomer and silent generation. But percentage getting married 18 to 33, the silent generation. These were the fellows who went to World War II and came back, remained silent, went back to work. 65% of them were married between 18 and 33. The baby boomers, and I span those two, was only 48% married, I should say, married between 18 and 33. So I sort of broke the curve there myself. Gen X, which is between the baby boomers and the millennials, 36%. And then the millennials, 26%. So once again, we're talking about percentage of people married between 18 and 33. The millennials are almost 1/3 of what the silent generation did. And it just steps down. The silent generation was 65%, baby boomers, 48%, Gen X, 36%, and then millennials. And now we have sub-millennials. There's a name for them, and I'm sure we'll come across it here. But they've just started into the workforce, the first 18-year-old born after 2000. And once again, we said a millennial was between, I'm just looking the actual age up, I believe it was, they're 25 to 34, and... Okay, so young millennials are 18 to 26. Older millennials are 26 to 36, 27 to 36. And then the sub-millennials are just below that. So, we're taking a look at the median age for marriage, and we're taking a look at the year. And in 2017, it's 30 for a man, 27 for a woman. In 1955, it was 23 for a man and 20 for a woman. So it's 50% higher than it was just 55, 60 years ago. Simply put, home ownership rate is the percentage of homes that are owned by these occupants. The home ownership rate computed and divided by the number of owner-occupied housing units and the total number of then by the total of occupied houses. As the economy has recovered and the housing stock market crash, more and more young professionals, and that was from the housing market crash, more and more young professionals moving out of their childhood homes and opting for a place on their own. Who can blame them? Everybody wants to be on their own. We're not the mold of the multi-generational family. At the same time, many were impacted by the shakeup of the economy and are beginning to rebuild their credit to a point where home ownership may again be an opportunity. The current home ownership rate for all Americans is around 64%. That's down from 73% just a few years ago, 10 years ago, when too many people had a house and a lot of them shouldn't. That was the bust. At the same time, the current home ownership is for 64.2%. Home ownership rate of Americans under 35 is 35%. So 35% of the 64%, and I'm going to read this sentence again because it's all in context and I don't want to screw it up. Current home ownership rate for all Americans is around 64%. The home ownership rate for Americans under the age of 35 was most recently reported at 35% compared to the 35 to 44 years old at 69%. So we're seeing more and more people get into this. Some economists have pointed out that an indicator of young people do not believe in home ownership, while they really should point out is that these are not there are more households now than there was ever before, and the percentage of those households owned by their inhabitants is low. So two things have been changing. We do have people doing this a little later in life, but we also have a lot more homes. The home ownership rate is calculated if six people own a home and nine people rent, well then 67% is the home ownership rent. Okay, so if you had 12 friends and six of them owned a home, free rent and free lived at home with their parents, the home ownership rate amongst them would be 67%. And what that is what you're saying is 6 divided by 9 is 67%. If your friends lived at home and their parents decided to move out, if your friends lived at home with their parents and decided to move out, one bought a home and two decided to rent, then you'd have like a 58%. I don't think these statistics are key, so I'm not going to dwell on them, but traditionally getting married and having kids is one big reason many Americans begin looking for a home to buy. According to NAR, National Association of Realtors, of which I'm a member, 57% of the first-time buyers, 69% of the repeat buyers were married couples. A study by Fannie Mae stated that married renters are 27% more likely to buy on their next move than single renters. That's an interesting statistic. Many experts believe that millennials age into the responsibility zone as they age, and the millennial baby boom is right around the corner. The data shows, and that's contrary to what we've just gone through, 2018 was the lowest birth rate on record. So it's been going down, and they're saying that because we're starting to see this boom in millennials buying their house, babies could be right around the corner. The thing I would argue is it's much easier to be selective as to when you have a baby and how many children you have. And it's very expensive to have a child. And I think one to two children is what we're going to see as the norm. The data shows that the transition is weighted until later in life to become parents. 48% of millennial women are mothers in 2016 compared to 57% the generation before. The rising age of first baby first birth is hardly limited to the millennial generation. It has been a trend since at least 1970. Many factors contribute. I just went through, including a shift away from marriage, increasing educational attainment, and the movement of women into the labor force. Do millennials want to be parents? The answer is, it depends. It's like the same answer to everything, isn't it? While millennials delay parenthood, it's not for a lack of interest in eventually becoming moms and dads. Members of this generation rated being a good parent as a top priority in 2010 survey. Some 52% said that it was one of the most important goals of their lives, well ahead of successful marriage, which was 30%. Just because the decision to start a family has been delayed, the desire to become parents has never waned. Parallel can be made to the desire for millennials to become homeowners as well. Delaying the decision does not mean they decided not to get married or have children or become a homeowner. They've just delayed it for lots of reasons, which we went through. More education, paying off some credit, getting ready. What does this mean for the housing market? Well, Mark Fleming, chief economist for First American, said as more millennials marry and have children, among the strongest determinations for the desire for homeowner, demand for housing will remain robust. The generation has already begun to shift its focus, providing the best homes for their children to grow up in the best school districts, and often providing the stability of owning a home of their own allows. So that stability of owning a home. Generations already begun to shift its focus on providing the best homes for their children to grow up in, the best school districts, and often providing the stability of owning a home. Two-thirds of millennials have not yet reached average first-time buyer home age of 32. And with the majority of the generation still outside their responsibility zone, the millennials have a lot of catching up to do, and home ownership rate amongst millennials has nowhere to go but up. So, what's holding millennials back from buying? A survey of young renters, Fannie Mae found that, and that's one of our federal mortgage agencies, the delay in most potential buyers is insufficient credit score or history, followed closely by affordability, a down payment. So, insufficient credit score or history, 53% held people back, and 50% was not having enough money. There are multiple potential homebuyers who delayed their purchase because they believe they do not qualify for the debt or the debt-to-income ratio, the credit score, or even the amount of savings they have. The challenge is that many of those who delay their purchases are not aware that opportunities are available and are not aware that they could qualify now. Instead of waiting for time to buy, they keep paying rent, and they could be building their own wealth. And I can show you charts where if you just took the money you're paying in rent, which means you're paying somebody else's mortgage, and bought a house, the same house that you're renting, you could either do it cheaper, and within 5 years, you would probably have 20-25% equity in that house. So let's break down the top three myths of holding back buyers. Number one, student loans. This is a problem. It is the number one reason some people don't have good credit. And typically, your student loan is going to cost you, once you start paying it back, 1% per month. So if you have, and 1% per month means you're going to take 10 years to pay it off, or more, depending on the interest. So if you owe $150,000, 1% a month of $150,000, 10% would be $15,000. 1% would be $1,500 a month. That's a lot of money to pay back. Here are some of the statistics about the average college graduate and their student loans. The average age of a college graduate is 22 years old. That's when they graduate. The average student graduates with $25,000 in student loan debt. That's, I think, conservative. So that's $250. That's your car payment. The average terms of savings loan, the terms of an average loan are 10 years with a monthly loan payment of $280 and interest rate of 6.8%. Looking to these stats, the average college graduate has what amount to a 10-year car payment after graduation. And I'll tell you, this is driving the factor of where millennials want to live, because if they can't afford a new car, they have to live where they can easily commute to work. So there's a premium on living near mass commutation. That hurts Hunterdon County because other than bus service, we do not have high-speed rail from here to New York City, and you typically have to drive somewhere, at least, if not all the way. Is earning a degree worth the debt? That's an argument we could have for two shows. According to a study of the Brookings Institute, divided the line between the haves and the have-nots in homeownership, education, not student debt. So the dividing line being home is education, not student debt. The picture accords that what we know about the growing gulf in the American economic fortunes of those who with a college education, men with a BA earn $35,000 more than those without it, and women $25,000. So what they're saying is the dividing line is between the haves and have-nots. If you go, I mean, let's face it, why are we going to school? Number one is earning capability when you get out and a lifetime basis. Those who completed at least a bachelor's degree without a student debt were 43% more likely to be a homeowner than high school graduates who didn't attend college because they're earning money. The College Board reports that the typical bachelor's degree recipient can earn about 66 more during a 40-year working life than a typical high school. That's an amazing number. Two-thirds more than if he didn't go to school, just went through high school. So if we were to use those numbers and go backwards, if you went to high school and you can come out and work in the trades or retail, you could probably earn easily $20 an hour after so long. You can start around 15. So it doesn't take much to get up to 20, another one-third. $20,000 is the have-not wage, and that's $40,000. $20 an hour is $40,000 a year. So we're saying that the average person with a college degree is going to earn 66% more. So four sixes is 24. You're probably looking at somebody earning $75,000 versus somebody earning $40,000. The College Board reports the typical bachelor's degree recipient can expect to earn two-thirds more during a 40-year working life than a typical high school graduate. So they're earning a third. So in effect, what happens with the uneducated is they may start at a decent salary, $15 an hour. We couldn't picture that a few years ago, but we're out of people right now, and we're paying it. And $15 an hour could get the $20 or $25 an hour, which will get you into the $40,000 to $50,000 range. But other than cost of living, that's probably where you stop. Where a four-year degree in something that's usable could earn you $75,000 to start versus $40,000. And that is roughly double, but it's just the start. You're going to earn $85, $95, $105. You're going to keep going up the ladder. Student loans have only delayed the ability to own a home, not taken away the desire to do it. So reasons for students' loans are delaying buying a home is 85% can't save for a down payment. 74% don't feel financially secure. 52% can't qualify for a mortgage based on debt to income. We'll talk about that. 47% can't afford their preferred house or neighborhood. And 18% don't have the financial know-how. Seems like there's some work to be done to educate the student loan people. And I, as a realtor, am experienced at doing that. If you'd like to know more, give me a call. Joe Peters, 908-238-0118. Can't save for a down payment. Well, that's a trap. Because what we find is the renters want to live in nicer rentals. And in a lot of cases, they move closer to the city in order to do that. And a lot of those are college graduates. But everything goes up. I mean, if you look at a two-bedroom here in Hunterdon County, you can get into a two-bedroom for $1,600 probably got to earn $70,000 to afford that. You go just to Somerset County, you're probably up to $2,000. You get into the counties that are a quick commute to New York, that number could double. And when it doubles, it means you're putting so much money into the rent and the lifestyle, because it doubles to get groceries and to eat out and to get a shirt cleaned and to park a car. Maybe you don't have a car, and that's why you moved over there. But now all of the discretionary income that could be going towards savings, towards buying a house, is being spent on day-to-day living. At least according to Ellie Mae's organizational report, loans closed over the last year had an average front-end debt of 25%. That means 25% of your gross is going to go to your house. And then when you add your car payments, your other credit cards, and your student debt, 39% is the average. So those are the numbers that we use. That's how I come up with that $1,250 is all you can afford when you earn $50,000. $50,000 divided by 12 is going to give you $1,250 a month. $50,000, and then you got to multiply that times 30%. So that's $15,000 divided by 12 is the $1,250. So they're saying the average debt to income, 25% on the front end, that's just what you're going to pay on housing. And on the back end, when you add all your other debt together, is 39%. Much higher than many believe what they need. So this is not a bad thing to learn. The last one is where the agent comes in. Don't have the financial know-how and the confidence to navigate. I'm a navigator. I help people get their ship into port. Your agent should be able to be your strategic partner throughout the home buying process. He or she will give you the answers to your questions, put your mind at ease, and the big decisions that you will be making in order to make your dream of owning a home come true. With student debt on the rise, there's a lot of speculation about whether the cost of college degree hurts an individual's ability to buy a home. And 46% of home buyers in 2017 had a student loan debt at the time of purchase. So what we're looking at is the immediate amount of all buyers with student debt. 26% of all buyers have student debt, and 46% of millennials have it. And the median amount, 26% have $25,000, and the millennials have a little higher. So student debt is one of the issues that come in that back end. I mean, let's say you had a simple solution. You earned $50,000 a year. Your front end was 25 or 30%. In the back end, the only other thing that went into it was your student debt. And the student debt, as they say, is an average of $300 a month here, roughly. So now that could bring you up to 35, 36%. You don't have much other for a credit card or the other debt that you may have. So let me have you sit with a mortgage person and have that mortgage person lay all of this out for you. So the first myth is I don't earn enough. The answer is you may be surprised. You need to talk to a professional. The second myth is you need 20% down to buy a house. And that's the biggest myth I've ever heard of. We're looking at the 36% of the people who buy a house do it with 5% or less. 44% do it with 10% or less. And 64% put 20% down. So you do not need. Now, if you don't put 20% down, you're probably going to pay a higher mortgage price and you're going to pay some private mortgage insurance. But in effect, you do not need to save the 20% in order to get started. You can start with as low as 2 or 3%. 61% of millennials who purchased a home in 2017 put down 10% or less. So 6 out of 10 people put 10% or less. And if you take a look at the 3% down, New Jersey had 1.57% of their buyers put 3% down. If you took a look at 10%, we had 5% put that down. But they got started. They're starting to grow the equity. I mean, buying a house is the greatest leverage that you could have. And let's talk about it. Let's say you only put 5% down. You bought a $200,000 house and you put 5% down. 10% would be $20,000, so 5% is $10,000 down. You save $10,000. Sounds like a big thing, but if you start, you get there. The issue is you can't be spending it on double lattes and $14 desserts. But you save and you put $10,000 into a house. But you bought a $200,000 house. So it's not just your $10,000 that's going to appreciate. The whole $200,000, that's the leverage factor, is going to go up by 3 to 5% a year. Let's use 5% on $200,000 is $10,000 a year. And let's say it does an average 5, it averages 4. So it's $8,000, but over 5 years, you're going to get $40,000 to $50,000 return on the $10,000 you put out. This leverage factor and this building wealth and equity in your house is the biggest thing you've got going for you. And the younger you are when you get started, the better off you're going to be when you get there. Third myth is you need perfect credit. Not. If you take a look, 53% of everybody we've got have 750 or less on credit. If you take a look at how that breaks down, 10% have under 650. Another 20% have under 650 to 700. So we've got 30% of our home buyers are putting down minimum amounts of money and are dealing with credit scores under 700. Now, if you have a better credit score, you're going to get a better mortgage rate because you're considered less of a risk. And if you put less money down, you're going to be charged more interest and maybe private mortgage insurance. But still, how does it stack up to the $40,000 or $50,000 that a $10,000 investment will return over 5 years? You need to look at that with an expert. And then we talk about the financial benefits of home ownership. The five reasons why owning a home makes perfect sense is mortgage payments can easily be fixed while rents will go up. So what I don't mean fixes doesn't mean that we're broke under fixed payments. You can get into a fixed mortgage payment and other than maybe your taxes and insurance go up a little bit. That's what you're going to pay for 30 years, 20 years, however you take this mortgage out. But you go into a rent, we're seeing 6 to 8%, 10% in good years, rentals going up. Equity in your home, number two, can be a financial resource later. But if you just got $10,000 started, bought a $200,000 house and turned that into a $240,000 house over 5 years because prices went up, that $40,000 is real money. When you go to buy your second home, you can take the 10 you put in and the 40 that went up and put that $50,000 down and now put 20% down on a larger house. You can build wealth without paying capital gains. There is no price tax-wise for you to sell a house that you've lived in for 2 years and buy another. There's no gains on it whatsoever. A mortgage can be a forced savings account. And overall, homeowners can enjoy greater wealth than renters. I think the other thing that you're missing is, too, that your mortgage payment is, to a great extent, a tax shelter. Now, the minimum base tax deduction doubled in the last year with the new tax rules. So a lot of people, the average person buying a $330,000 house is the average price across New Jersey. In Hunterdon County, it's like $400,000, and in Somerset County, it's closer to $500,000. But a $330,000 average for the whole state probably isn't going to get any benefit tax-wise. But the higher you pay, the more you're going to get tax-wise. And the more you make and the higher tax bracket you get in, the better it's going to be. So you do get a tax shelter. But getting caught in a rental trap is the antithesis or the opposite of this. And what you do is you pay somebody else's mortgage and you never put anything away yourself. And if you take a look at the increasing gap in family wealth, And every 3 years, the Federal Reserve conducts a survey of consumer finances, which collects the data of all economic and social groups. And the latest survey, which indicates data from 2013 and 16, reports that a homeowner's net worth is 44%, 44.5 times greater than a renter. 231,000 versus 5,200. So how does that work? I mean, you pay to rent, you pay to rent, you pay to rent. I told you already, it's higher than your mortgage payment. And you don't get any of the equity. Your landlord's getting that. That's why he bought the place. But if you put it into a house, your first 5 years with 10%, 5% down could bring you back $50,000. And that's the difference. And you're going to start building wealth. And what they're saying is 45 times greater than a renter. And that's by the time you're finished. Okay? So you're usually finished in your 60s somewhere. So you put your housing costs to work for you. You get somewhat of a tax shelter. You get appreciation. Live where you want to. You fix it up the way you want to. Not, I can't paint up anything but this color. You don't have a garage. You want a garage. You don't have play area for the kids and dog. Can't have a dog if you're renting a lot of times. You get to live the way you want. And your home is an asset you can borrow against in the future. So, in effect, if you take a look at, and we're looking at a map here on one page in this guide, it shows that using the same report from CoreLogic, it shows an average equity gain per month per mortgaged home in the last 12 months. And in New Jersey, it was an average of $12,000. That's an average. Some people are going to get 4, some people are going to get 30, but the average was 12. It happens. It's a 4. You got to pay the rent. And that's why renting, landlording is such a good business. The landlords realize, although some people default, you got to live somewhere and you're going to figure out a way to pay the rent. And they might as well have you rent from them, and then they go on vacation while you're working an extra job. So why do millennials choose to buy? They have control over their living space. That's number one. They have a sense of privacy and security, 90%. That's number two. They live in a nicer home and in a lot of times a nicer area, 81%. They feel engaged in their community, Little League, church, civic organization, 75%. And they have the flexibility for future decisions. So here's some tips. Automate your down payment savings. It should be a separate account from all other accounts, and it should be nothing. You never eat your children. This is a rule. If you've ever read The Most Richest Man in the World, he said the best you do is maybe once your children start having children and they start having children, you take a little bit of that net gain and start using it for your lifestyle. But you never eat your children, which is your savings. And you never eat your children's children, which is the interest on that savings or the growth on it. So automate your down payment system. Build your credit history. Go see somebody about this. The biggest things about credit is not paying bills on time, having too much outstanding, and in effect, having too many accounts open. Understand the philosophy of credit cards, and a lot of people don't understand this. They were designed for you to pay off every bill every month. If you pay off every bill every month, you will never pay any interest on credit cards because they only start billing you at the beginning of the second month when you haven't paid it all off. And they have to tell you how many months it's going to take you to pay it off if you give them the minimum. Look at that. Those are scary numbers, anywhere from 7 to 14 years typically. So automate your down payment, build your credit, understand how credit works, understand I'm going to pay most of the payment on time, but I'm going to have to pay $20 late. You might as well pay the whole thing late. It hurts you. You've got to make your payments on time. And practice living on a budget. I got to tell you how important this is. And I see some ads for it. But you have to understand how much you make. You have to allocate what you're going to use your take-home pay for. And you have to put some away for savings, some away for discretionary in case you have an emergency. And then the rest is for day-to-day living and a capital fund so that you've got some money when it's time to go on vacation. You've got some money when it's time to put a down payment on a new car. And you should understand your credit score. I would think, depending on where you're at, you should be shooting to get a credit score of at least 700. And remember what I said, that the people with credit scores of 700 and above are, I'm just coming back to what percentage was where on a credit score. If you get your credit score up to over 700 over a couple of years, you're going to be in pretty good shape when it comes to buy a house. Of the people that buy a house, ...53% of them are between 600 and 750. 24% of them are between 700 and 750. Another 33% between 750 and 800, and the perfect credit score is over 800, or 13%. But you're looking at people under the 700 mark as being 20, 30, a third of all people are below the 700 mark. You don't want to be down there, because what's going to happen is you are going to have to pay more for everything you do. I don't care if it's your credit card, your car payment, or your house. It's all going to cost you more money. So get to know your credit score. Understand how to get your credit score up, and there are services that can do that, and get that done. So what you really want to be doing is you need three things to buy a job, to buy a house. You need a job, and the job has to be paying enough money, and you need some stability in that job. You could have been in it for a while and not changed careers. And then, two, you need some money saved, because it's going to cost you money to buy a house. Minimum 3% down, minimum 3% to close. You need 6% minimum. And then thirdly, you need a decent credit score. And you do need all three of these. They interplay with each other. And I think understanding your capacity and how debt to income works is key. I would suggest you get together with a mortgage professional. Say to him, eventually, I know I'm not going to get a mortgage this year unless you work a miracle, but eventually I am going to get a mortgage, and I'll come back and get it through you. You'll find they'll be happy to sit down and help you go through this millennial understanding. So once again, this is A Millennial's Guide to Home Ownership. It's available on my site. Go to jpeters.com. That's my name, Joe Peters, but jpeters.com/guide. And I will send you one of these guides, and I also send you a buyer's guide as well. And I'd also be happy to sit down with you and help you get started, because I love helping people. I think it's key. It's my way of giving back. You've got to understand what you're coming up against. It's not as harsh as you think. There's a lot of moving parts. But once you understand it, and you may need to come back with a question or two, you'll be well on your way to home ownership. I would think a goal of at least a 700 credit score, stability in your job, and enough to a minimum 6%, 3% down, and 3% for closing cost. And a lot of that is things like title and insurance and surveys and appraisals. It just adds up real quick. So if you're going to buy a $200,000 home, you probably need $12,000 to do it. 3% for minimum down payment, 3% for closing, and then you need a little bit of money to move. This has been Joe Peters. I, in effect, love helping first-time buyers and millennials, and I think the world of millennials, because I think they're our future. If you'd like some help, give me a call. I'm going to play my commercial now, and it'll have my phone number at the end, and I'd love to hear from you. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back next week, and we're going to talk about solar power next week.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
This is Joe Peters signing out for September 10th, 2019. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you join me again on future podcasts and broadcasts, and I'll see you then. Thanks.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
National Security Advisor John Bolton is out at the Capitol. South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham says the personal relationship between President Trump and the National Security Advisor is important.
The view that there's some public discussions about Bolton being on the other side of meeting with the Taliban probably was a bridge too far.
The president announced the ouster in a tweet. The president also noted that he disagreed strongly with many of Bolton's suggestions. North Carolina voters are heading to the polls in a special election seen as a bellwether for the 2020 elections. President Trump was in Fayetteville, North Carolina, drumming up support for Republican Dan Bishop, who says,
"The last thing he needs is for the 9th District to send him another Nancy Pelosi clone."
Dan McCready, the Democrat, is trying to position himself as a moderate. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Is it possible that an ancient mystery lies behind today's news? The events of the world, world leaders, even Donald Trump, and the events of your life. Could this mystery even reveal the future events that are yet to come? Jonathan Cahn, the New York Times bestselling author of The Harbinger, The Paradigm, and The Book of Mysteries, now brings The Oracle. Prepare to be blown away. The Oracle by Jonathan Cahn. Available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
Liberty Mutual Insurance presents
Limu. And Doug. Is that your pet, Emu?
He's my partner, Limu. And we're here to tell you that Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance so you only pay for what you need.
So is he only an emu because it rhymes with Limu, as in Liberty Mutual?
Well, I won't.
So this is just a clever way to get people to remember Liberty Mutual, huh?
Kinda.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Only pay for what you need at libertymutual.com.
Underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates. Equal housing insurer. State laws apply.
A Blue Lives Matter vigil was held on Monday night in New York City. This comes as 9 NYPD officers and a retired sergeant have taken their own lives so far this year. Retired NYPD detective Sam Calderon.
You sit in your home by yourself and you have a firearm, or you're in a garage with your car, and you decide you want to turn it on and just sit there and close your eyes. Any of these things, because you want the pain to go away. You want all those demons just leave.
The last remaining crew member of a capsized cargo ship off Georgia's coast has been rescued. And regarding that last crew member, U.S. Coast Guard Captain John Reed tells NBC's Today Show,
"They're being checked at the local hospitals, and I have not got word yet on how they're all doing. But to see the last that last crew member come off pretty much under his own power was outstanding."
The Golden Ray ship capsized near the busy port of Brunswick on Sunday. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.